Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So we've had confirmation from the government that all international passengers will soon have to test negative for COVID before travelling to the UK. This will be a PCR test up to 72 hours before leaving the country they're in. James, before I suppose we get into the details of this, what the trigger appears to be, given that this has been a topic the government has been criticised for not doing enough on for some time, is the concern over new strains, particularly the South African strain, and what that means for the vaccine. So is this why the government is moving now? Because we know that when it comes to open borders or, I suppose, the lack of paperwork or tests people have to do on arrival here, the government have been criticised for some time.
Yes, the government has not moved quickly on this, I think you're right that the reason that they have now relented and agreed that people would have to have this negative PCR test is this concern over new variants. But even today, Grant Shapps was saying that basically the isolation period after people arrive for quarantine is a bigger contributor to the fight against the virus than the PCR test, because the PCR test merely means that you don't have it when you take the test. It doesn't mean that you don't have it at the point of arrival. And I think if you do look at this, Taiwan, South Korea, they have got their COVID border security down a lot better than the UK has. So I think we will see what effect this has. I also think there is considerable nervousness in government about new strains and whether they will work with the vaccine or not.
And on that, Fraser, there's been early encouraging news from Pfizer in relation to the South African vaccine. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, Pfizer says it's done a lab experiment where it's shown that its vaccine is effective on both the new English variant and the South African variant. It was as expected, because there have been lots of variants. I think they've now formally done lab tests on 17 COVID variants, all of which have proved effective. But it's always theoretically possible that these mutations, remember there are something like 12,000 mutations of COVID, that one of them might be significant enough to dodge the vaccine, but that doesn't seem to be happening yet. Now, James and I spoke to Matt Hancock about this when we interviewed him 2 or 3 days ago, and he was quite optimistic that if it is the case that we do see a new variant which does go outwith the bounds of the Pfizer vaccine, then you can simply update it, almost like updating an app, as it were, and have a new mRNA vaccine which you could get approved quite quickly. The delay with these vaccines isn't so much finding the mixture which works, it's getting it tested properly. And Matt Hancock was telling us that he thinks that in the same way that you can update a flu vaccine without having to go back to square one for the regulator, you could update a new COVID vaccine if there were a new strain. But the Pfizer-BioNTech study, which was conducted on blood taken from people who'd been given the vaccine, suggests that we're not at that dangerous stage yet.
So, James, that's promising news. And we also had the Prime Minister trying to put some optimism into the gloomy picture in terms of lockdown yesterday in a press conference by giving us an update on the vaccine rollout. At the moment, if you're looking at the global league tables, I think the UK is fourth in terms of the number of people they've vaccinated in relation to the population. Are we expecting them to go up quite quickly in terms of the figures in the coming weeks now?
So I think the view is that we start getting daily numbers on Monday. I mean, the view in government is that Monday number will not be sensational, but that by the end of that week, you really should see a big increase. The kind of analogy that one minister used me, that it's going to be like a hockey stick. You know, it's going to be up, it goes like that. I think that this time next week, we will have a much better idea of whether the government is going to hit this target of vaccinating 13.5 million people by the middle of February, which obviously relies on doing about 2 million vaccines a week.
Fraser, there's been a lot about the slow rollout, about questions about supply, questions about what is going to be needed to accelerate it. But if we step back a bit, look at the problems in the EU on vaccines, are we in a way seeing a success story, at least comparatively, or compared to other projects such as Test and Trace?
Well, you bet. I mean, I think, Katie, we're actually third in the world behind Israel.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but behind Israel, and which has got 17% of its population done, and Bahrain, which is tiny, but they've managed to get 4%. We have done 1.3 million vaccines. That's almost 2% of our population. That's ahead of the United States. 1.3 million is still more than the rest of Europe put together. So yes, there are obvious frustrations that we couldn't have rolled out our vaccine faster. But when you look at the rest of the world, it really does seem as if we don't have really much to complain about on an international perspective. And the reason for this hockey stick uptake that James describes is that for the first few days, the vaccines are being given in hospitals. They're doing that so they want to be absolutely sure that the Oxford vaccine doesn't result in any nasty shocks. And if there are nasty shocks, they want people to have those shocks in hospital where they can be treated. This is because when the Pfizer vaccine was rolled out, they did have two NHS staff who reacted very badly indeed to it and absolutely needed the kind of care that hospitals can provide. But if we are rolling out thousands of the Oxford vaccines in hospitals Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and there aren't any terrible results, then you can take it to the vaccine hubs, the other centres, and that's when you really start to get a major uplift in the way that the vaccines are distributed. So we're going slowly right now to make sure that there aren't any of these nasty side effects. Even then, people are told to hang around for 15 minutes just to make sure that they don't have side effects. Everybody who's administering the vaccine has been given training on how to cope with people's side effects. Personally, I would far rather that we go slowly at this rate to make absolutely sure that the vaccine is as safe as we think and the side effects are as few as we think, because we don't want to risk a situation where there's a scare story about the vaccines being dangerous and we end up with French levels of lack of interest in receiving the vaccine.
James, when it comes to the vaccine debate that we're seeing emerging, or the beginnings of it in the Tory party, you've written on Coffee House about the sense on when restrictions could be eased, could go. Where do you think we're going to see the friction between Tory backbenchers and the government? Because as we saw and as we spoke about earlier in the week, in terms of opposing lockdown in the current form, that debate seems to have died. People do accept it, partly because of the rates, partly because of the vaccine. So where is the rub coming?
So the rub is going to come if the government hits its mid-February target. This week's kind of Commons debate on the restrictions made clear, but there'll be a big push for Tory MPs for a kind of a really substantial easing of the restrictions. I don't mean that's what the government has got planned. Boris Johnson said on Monday night that if you can hit that 13.5 million target by mid-Feb, you can kind of start to carefully move back down the tier system. What I think that means is, you know, you get schools reopening, but probably in big population centres like London, you're probably not looking at much more than that in terms of an easing up of restrictions. So but then the question becomes, once the government have got to 2 million vaccinations a week, they should be able to keep that pace going, you know, because you know, you've built the distribution infrastructure. This is a domestically manufactured vaccine in the Oxford AstraZeneca one, which the government has ordered a very substantial number of doses of. That means that you should be able to vaccinate 28 million people who form the phase one of the vaccination group, or given their first shot by the beginning of April. Now, Jonathan Van Tam has said that if you can do that, that has dealt that you've given a first shot to people who are 99% of hospitalizations and deaths. And I think at that point, there will be huge pressure on the government to really ease up restrictions. Now, remember that the first shot of the vaccine takes 2 to 3 weeks to give you that initial bit of protection. So I think we're probably looking, if you were thinking the timetable, kind of end of April, beginning of May, if the government can get this rollout right. Now, that's obviously a big if, but the UK does have two big advantages here. Advantage one is a fridge temperature vaccine that has been approved by the regulator. And the second advantage is how willing the public is to take the vaccine, which should mean that you shouldn't have any take-up issues that some other countries which have got much bigger anti-vax sentiment might end up facing.
Now, finally, Fraser, even if the vaccine rollout goes to plan, continue to be high up that, on that chart, there are other factors that are going to affect when restrictions can be eased. And there are very worrying figures. I think we can probably find this on the Spectator Data Hub in terms of the level of cases, but also in terms of patients being admitted. So yesterday we had NHS Chief Simon Stevens say that every single day in London alone, 800 new patients with COVID are admitted to hospital. Do you think this has the potential to affect or slow down the vaccine rollout if we do have scenes where the NHS is overwhelmed?
It's certainly true that the virus is rolling itself out way faster than we are rolling vaccines out right now. We've something like 1.2 million people in Britain right now who've currently got COVID. Now, Simon Stevens is also right to say that the pressure in London is particularly acute. You can see this in our data hub where we've got live data, data.spectator.co.uk. And we've got all the figures for London, nationally, regionally, internationally. And if you look at the graph for patients with COVID in London hospitals, it shows that the figure has quadrupled in the last month. The previous peak was 5,000 patients in London hospitals with COVID. Now it's broken 7,000. And that's after barely being at 1,500 at the beginning of last month. So you can certainly see a race between the vaccines and the virus. That's the theme of our cover story this week. I'm not sure it will slow down the vaccinating progress, though, because the healthcare professionals ought to be protected, first of all. And right now, the constraint isn't the number of people giving out the vaccine. The constraint is the supply. The government keeps saying this, that yes, it might have trouble approving people to be vaccinators. We had Liam Fox, former Defence Secretary, standing up in the House of Commons a few days ago saying that he, a former GP, had to go through some counter-terrorism training course to be a vaccinator. And isn't this a scandal? But it's not a scandal right now if the number of people administering the vaccine way outstrips the amount of vaccine getting to them. We could come to that point, but we're not at that point yet. And looking at these London figures, I suspect for the next couple of weeks, we could start to see hospitals being genuinely overrun in a way that they weren't in the first virus round. The second wave, for a long time, looked like it was going to be smaller than the first. Now, I'm not quite sure anybody would be bold enough to say the same.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James.